My name is Blake Drolson, and I'd like to welcome you tonight to tonight's event. We are happy to GMO-free Kauai, Hawaii Seed and Seeds of Truth are happy to host tonight's event, bringing you another night of fabulous scientists and information regarding GMOs and pesticides in our community. So we're very excited tonight to have Dr. Lauren Pang, Dr. Judy Carmen, and Dr. Stephanie Seneff here to share their wisdom. We are going to start tonight's event with a pulle, and so I'm going to ask Journey to come out and give us a pulle.
Aloha. Let us take a few moments to say a short prayer together. Wankin Tanka Tunkashila Unchi. We pray to you, Akua, we pray to you. Tonight we come to learn more, to protect the love and create a healthier world. We pray that our knowledge shared here tonight is a beacon of light and truth that goes out into the world, to help wake up humanity and to teach our leaders to take action. We pray that future generations will have a healthy world to live upon, that our planet and our beautiful island is sustainable and our reefs and waterways are pure and thriving. We pray for all the change makers, the ones out here speaking up, telling the truth, doing their part to wake people up. Mahalo to Dr. Stephanie Seneff and Dr. Judy Carmen for coming here to share their wisdom. Please bless and watch over them in their travels. We pray that planet Earth and Kauai will be green, sustainable, and healthy for the next 7 generations and many more to come. Finally, we ask to give us strength and wisdom as we stand for Mother Earth, and that we gather and to thank you for the Aina, the land, air, water, and fire that has been gifted to us all. And we pray that we are guided in how to best protect, heal, and care for this beautiful gift of life called Mother Earth. Matakwe asin, mahalo ke akua, and so it is.
Journey is a young man that lives here in goes to school at Kane Kapono, but he also just completed a journey of a sort to Washington, D.C., and before we hear from the scientists, we're going to hear from him for 10 minutes to describe his journey and what he discovered on it.
Aloha. My name is Journey Mani Waji Zephyr. I'm 15 years old and attend Kane Kapono Public Charter School in Anahola. I would like to start out tonight by saying thank you. Mahalo. I just returned from a trip to Washington, D.C., and that trip would not have been possible without the support of many of you here tonight. I want to express my deep and heartfelt gratitude to you all. I also want to thank my dad for blessing me in ceremony and handing down some of the regalia and eagle feathers. My dad is a chief, and he sun-danced for many years with this eagle feather fan. It has a lot of prayers in it, and I am honored and humbled to carry it. I also want to thank Auntie Lili for hosting Inipi for my trip, Auntie Kelly for being firekeeper, Davian for helping with fire, and Rob Ike for covering my hotel when Yankton Sioux Tribal Council did not come through at the last minute. I also want to thank my mob, who sacrifices a lot to make sure I can follow my dreams and my calling. And so I would like to say mahalo to all of you for supporting me and to share a little bit about my journey to Washington, D.C. I was invited by President Obama to come to Washington, D.C. for the first ever White House Tribal Youth Gathering. This gathering gave Native youth leaders the opportunity to speak directly with White House officials on issues that matter to us. It was a great honor to represent not only my tribe, the Ankton Sioux tribe, but also my Ohana and Kauai and the other islands, my Hawaiian family. I am blessed with two cultures, the strength of the warrior, spirit of the ancestors, the Lakota and Dakota people, and the aloha of the Hawaiian culture. I walk with these two cultures, a culture of love, with eagle feathers in my hair and flowers on my shoulder. I have been named as a Gen I Native Youth Ambassador as part of President Obama's Generation Indigenous Initiative, which will help me have a voice on the national level. And one of the projects that I'm going to be working on this year is the Kauai Native Youth Council, bringing together a council of youth that will help keep tabs on the Kauai County Council and Legislature to help make sure our voices are heard in the lawmaking process. I don't think laws should be passed that affect my generation's future survival without our input. The Kauai Youth Council will be a platform to make our voices heard, and that I am supported in that effort by the Kauai, by the Unity Inc.
Okay.
I was also brought into the RISE Global Youth Council, 18 youth leaders from around the world working to solve environmental and human rights issues. And this year I will also continue building Earth Guardians Kauai Youth Crew to fight for environmental justice. We are working on a leadership training for this winter to bring Earth Guardians youth from all of the Hawaiian Islands to Kauai for an intensive workshop in environmental and community leadership. Atinomi Carmona of Babes Against Biotech has agreed to help me co-facilitate this youthful leadership training with the RISE Global Youth Council to help empower Hawaii's environmental leaders of tomorrow. Right now, I'm trying to secure a retreat location for this training so we can make sure that youth like me are trained in how to organize at a grassroots level, make their voices heard, and create a positive change for their communities. I'm excited about bringing this to Kauai. Before I share some of the things I experienced at the White House Tribal Youth Gathering, I want to say that the most inspiring thing about the gathering was that there's so many young youth like me that care about what is happening to our planet and that want to make a difference. All of the kids there were very passionate about the issues that came to represent. There was a strong sense of unity. And we were all in this together, that our generation will truly be the one that rises up to create powerful change in our planet. I believe we are the ones we have been waiting for. There is a Native prophecy that the seventh generation will rise up to create a new world, and we are that generation. It made me feel inspired to be part of so many other activist youth, and I want all of you to know that we got this. Our generation is not going to give up. Until we see climate change reversed, a world of sustainable agriculture and green energy, a place where we can all thrive in harmony with Mother Earth. The EPA director recently said that if we take action now on climate change and keep global temperatures from rising more than 2 degrees, we can save 35% of the Hawaiian reefs in the next 85 years. But if we take no action, we will see that all of these reefs are lost, all of them. That should make all of us tonight want to take action. The issue of pesticides polluting our reefs is even more critical when we realize how short the time is to reverse the coral death. With our reefs in such danger, we should not be allowing the world's biggest chemical companies to spray tons of pesticides that run into the waterways and reefs. What will we do in 85 years if the reefs are gone? What will the Hawaiian people do when there are no more reef or fish? Thousands of years of culture destroyed in a few decades. And for what? So the biggest chemical companies can make more profits on chemicals that they have poured into our reefs. At the White House Tribal Youth Gathering, the environment was one concern that the youth shared. All of us, frankly, are scared. We are scared because adults in power are making decisions and laws that impact our future and are destroying our planet. And we seem to have little power in the process, but we are trying to change that. Young people like me are speaking up, making our voices heard all over the planet. We are trying to make sure we have a voice in our future, because laws that are passed today will impact my generation more than it will impact the adults making those decisions. We are inheriting a planet in crisis. In Washington, D.C., I was honored to meet First Lady Michelle Obama, and I was able to attend panels on energy, environment, and health with the EPA, Department of Energy, and Department of Health. I also attended a workshop on native sovereignty, which helped me understand what true sovereignty is. I also had a talk with Megan Smith, White House technology officer, and shared with her my concerns about TMT being built on top of Mauna Kea, and she was very interested and unaware that TMT was being built on top of a protected sacred site, and shocked to hear that our governor was not advocating for the Hawaiian people on this issue. She promised to investigate further, and that I am glad I was able to bring Mauna Kea to the attention of the White House. I was able to talk about pesticides and how pesticide exposure in Native communities, especially here in Kauai, is a big concern for me. I think I was the only young person there who was talking about GMOs and pesticides. And people were surprised that I thought that was a Native issue. And I explained that these huge chemical corporations have a history of moving into poor Native communities that need jobs. And they use these jobs as blackmail, basically. So people are afraid to complain about pesticides and illness because they need jobs. I tried to set up a meeting with Tom Vilsack, Secretary of Agriculture at the USDA, but he did not see me. I wonder why. I went to the USDA in person. I still cannot get in, but I did visit the USDA farmers market outside the building, and I was disappointed when I asked a couple of the vendors if their produce was GMO. I asked them, and they said they did not know. I also attended a congressional welcome reception sponsored by the Native American Congress and Nike. I was able to talk more about the issues that concern youth with lawmakers, and was able to network with other youth leaders. My takeaway from the White House youth gathering is that even though we are facing huge environmental crisis right now on Mother Earth, the kids of my generation are getting organized, educated, connected, and ready to take major action. Right now, we have kids like me on the front line of World War III. We are fighting the world's biggest corporations, the world's biggest oil and chemical companies, and the corrupt leaders who support them in destroying our future survival. But it's important to remember that this war is not fought against the corporations. It's also not even a war to save the Earth. We are not fighting against anything. This is a war inside our own selves. This is a battle to wake up the hearts and the consciousness of humanity. Children are on the front lines because we are the ones who have the love, innocence, and the truth that can wake up the hearts and minds of humankind. When you are awake, when your heart is connected to other humans and to all of creation, it becomes impossible for you to harm the earth, because love shows that when you destroy the Aina, you destroy your own future. So if we want to save the earth, first we have to save ourselves and rebuild a conscious awareness of the web of life that connects us all. Because some people have forgotten this, and this is why they are destroying our environment. So while some might see this as a war, as a battle to save the earth, or against corporate greed, I see this as an awakening, a shift inside the hearts and minds of humanity, and we are winning one heart at a time with the power of love. What I ask of you all is that each of you do your part to make my generation and my children can survive and thrive on planet Earth and on Kauai, because I promise you my generation is not giving up. But we need all of you to have our backs together. We can do this. Mahalo.
Words of wisdom. Thanks again to Journey. Our next speaker is Dr. Lauren Pang. He is the Maui health officer here speaking as a private citizen. Years ago, he was named one of the top doctors in the world by the World Health Organization. More recently, he's now serving as a professor of medicine at a university in Brazil, and he's been reviewing medical research for the U.S. Congress for the last few years. So he always brings great medical insight into what's happening with the pesticide exposure here on the islands, and we're very happy to welcome Dr. Lauren Pang. Please give him a warm round of applause.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. This is, I'm going to get a little problems here. Press this one. Okay. I'm getting old. I can't see that well. And I'm looking at the slide sideways, so just bear with me. First of all, I want to thank the previous speaker, Journey. I don't know him. I hope I felt this way when I was his age. I doubt it. He seems wise beyond his years. I'm shocked he wrote his own speech. I think I feel this way, but I could not say it. So let me just say that if tonight I was looking for inspiration, I just saw it from the previous speaker. Now, I'm going to talk, I could talk about pesticides and chemicals, but for me that's kind of easy. And I know the other two speakers, I've heard them speak in Maui, and so I was trying to be a little more complimentary and talk about something else. The something else I'm going to talk about is GMO food itself, not the chemicals used to grow it. So I'm going to focus on that, but I could talk about chemicals or our field questions if you want. So the general talk is, I come from Maui, and we fought for a moratorium. We won it fair and square. We voted it. And we wanted to know, or people want to know, why are you trying to control GMO farming? I can only speak from the medical and public health issue. Other people maybe can speak economics. Other people can speak agriculture, but I will have to take this because this is my area. Okay, so first of all, I taught this area for the World Health Organization for 20 years, and I worked with regulators. Regulators are people who bring products to market. And in general, I was a little confused myself. So here's the general principle. You can do whatever you want in your own place, but as soon as your stuff gets out, either voluntarily or involuntarily, like your embers get out and you cause a fire, your pollen gets out and it starts to make funny invasive plants. These are insects. My vision's really bad. These are insects. If you are breeding insects and it bothers your neighbors, regulators will come. Now we have these things, drugs, beer, all these medications. Well, they got out, didn't they? But it was voluntary. You sold it and he bought it. So there's kind of a consensus that's still considered getting out. When it gets out to the public, you will and you should be regulated. The end. Now, spraying that drifts, you contaminate the water, like the previous speaker said, and food. When you eat your own food, we have no problem with that. When you grow your own tobacco and smoke it yourself, the regulators cannot touch you. But the minute you bring it out and sell it, the regulators will be there. Okay, so that's the general principle. Do the stuff to yourself and we won't bother you. Now, in order for the food, I just want to talk about GM food. My area was vaccines and drugs, but I just apply this to foods. Why? Because it's a product intended to enter the body. Yep. It must meet one of the following conditions to the extent that it is to be used. So if you're going to sell me your food, I'm going to ask you for long-term studies because I plan to eat your food long-term. When I use my drugs for 3 weeks, nobody ever asked me for a six-month study of my drugs. And if I should use my drugs for longer than 3 weeks, I get in trouble. So the length of time. Next, the GM foods right now, they're unlabeled. So if you're going to use long-term exposure, I'm going to ask you to test your food or your drugs in all the high-risk subpopulations. What does that mean? Babies, fetus, mothers. They're very susceptible when they're pregnant, and the babies are susceptible when they're in utero. Elderly, highly susceptible. Anyone with chronic disease, very susceptible. So when my drugs are labeled, and I did not test them in pregnant women, it says, warning, not tested in pregnant women. But when your GM food is unlabeled, somebody better test this long-term in pregnant women, because they will be eating it just like anyone else. So the nature of the use tells you how you have to bring these, what tests you have to do to bring them to market. Now, there's only three ways. I mean, there's three ways you can get this to market. You can either do a pivotal study. I'll go over each one, but pivotal study, that means like a key study. You can maybe not do a pivotal study, but get written informed consent of everybody who's going to take this product, GM food. Or you can prove it's bioequivalent. The key word is equivalent, equal. So we have moved for the World Health Organization, drugs, vaccines, to the market by all these methods, pivotal study, written informed consent, or proof of bioequivalence. I will show you in the next, whatever, 15 minutes, this is not done from GMOs. They think that maybe they kind of did this, maybe kind of do that, kind of do that. They haven't done anything, okay? And in my field, we teach against this. You are violating some basic rules here. This is the pivotal study. What's a pivotal study? The pivotal study is the key study before it comes to market. Well, what does that mean? It always is a human study. Even in the human studies, there's a small study, phase one, looking for toxicity. There's a larger study looking for dose. And then this larger study, phase three. I remember we did one in Thailand. It involved 75,000 children. These are big studies that look carefully at toxicity and efficacy to see if it's worth the risk, bang for the buck. And we also have such a big study, it's statistically sound. We covered all kinds of children. It was 75,000 children, but all kinds of children, obese, a little bit malnourished, young, short, guys with dengue. So we do these monster key studies. It's called pivotal. Okay? Usually, there's all these fancy ways to do it. Blinded, controlled, randomized. We have our requirements to keep it scientifically sound. Okay, so how many studies have we done? Any pivotal studies done for any GM food? Well, there was the Nicolia review of 1,700 published GMO studies. How many were pivotal? Zero. How many were human? Even human? Three. Those human studies were not really pivotal at all. They're kind of anecdotal. You know, these guys with an external stomach tube, they feed them GM food to see if the stuff comes out in the stomach tube. And that's not pivotal. That's interesting. And it's like three guys or 10 guys. Okay? So there's no even decent human studies, let alone pivotal. Okay. So you haven't done any pivotal studies. So that door is closed. Except Dr. Goldstein, physician from Monsanto, came to Maui to debate with me before the Maui Medical Society. And he told us, well, pivotal clinical studies cannot be done. Whoa. I do this for drugs and vaccines, 75,000 children in Thailand. He said they can't be done. Because if you were to test this GM food, you'd have to give it to this person for 30 years and give him nothing but GM food. Oh, come on. That's not how we test drugs. Do I give him nothing but the drug for 30 years? Do I give them nothing but the drug for 3 weeks? That's absolutely wrong. And I really don't know where he's coming from. And I will show you later on the counterexample, but he says that, but I don't believe him. And it's simply not true, not the way I've taught for the World Health Organization. Okay. Now, maybe, never mind pivotal studies, we're through with that. You didn't do any. Maybe there's written informed consent. Well, why do we do that? Well, you know what? We're in an emergency. The Ebola is coming. Well, it was coming. We fixed it, right? Avian flu was coming. We don't have time for a pivotal study. These pivotal studies can take 1 year or 2 years. Ebola was breathing down our neck. And so, no time for pivotal studies. So we write it up. It's called the heroic crisis measure. And we say, we haven't studied this, but we think this is our best shot. Do you want to take this vaccine or drug? It's written informed consent. I tell you what it is. I tell you the alternatives, and you sign. I understand. I could get I could die from avian flu. The death rate of the H5N1 is 70%. Trust me, if we had some vaccine that showed any inkling in an animal, I would offer it to you, but you signed. Written informed consent. Okay. Do we do this, written informed consent, even in the poor countries, Bangladesh? We tested a Shigella vaccine in Bangladesh. I had good intentions. I was trying to help them, but they all had to sign because the vaccine is live. So if I gave it to you and you said I want it, but it spreads to her because it's live and she didn't want it, well, then you can't use it in the village, Dr. Pang, because it can spread to her who didn't want it. So that's informed consent. Okay. So do we have informed consent for GMOs? Well, here's something interesting. This is from the in-flight magazine of Hawaiian Airlines during the middle of our moratorium campaign in Maui. You know, we're trying to control GM farming. And in this magazine, I'll blow it up here, but you can read it. Well, I won't read it for you. But it says GM papaya is developed just like H1N1 flu vaccine, scientific and safe. They are saying that the GM papaya is wonderful and safe and scientific, just like the H1N1 vaccine. Those are the vaccines we use, and those are the vaccines we control. But in this in-flight magazine, Hawaiian Airlines, it said it's kind of like that. What's your problem? The problem is this. This is the written informed consent for the flu vaccine every year. You read this to the mom, she signs it, whether a kid wants it or not. What else about the flu vaccine? We give this under written informed consent in the fall. It's tested in humans in the summer. So it's tested in humans, written informed consent, and it's labeled. Because it's labeled, we can track it. After the vaccine day is over, if 3 kids go into coma, I can say, well, did they get the flu vaccine? It's tracked. So I'm a little bit upset that you compare the GM papaya, which was never tested on humans, never released under informed consent, not labeled, impossible to track if it did cause disease, to the vaccines that we developed and use. Okay? Now, here is the final way you can do it. Okay? No pivotal trial. Okay? No written informed consent. Okay? But you prove bioequivalence. That means for a drug that I give the drug to you orally. I measure in your blood, how's the drug level? 6 hours, 12 hours, does it work? I can measure the drug level and all the metabolites in you over time. What's bioequivalence? Well, now we have a little story here. We were treating malaria by giving people the pill. Okay. Sometimes they get too sick and they're in coma. You cannot give somebody a pill in coma. They'll vomit and get an aspiration pneumonia. So we said, let's give it as a suppository. Well, you mean I had to do all the studies again on the same drug? No. All you have to do is give it as a suppository, measure the drug levels to say that it's equivalent drug level and you're home free. That's bioequivalence. I was working with the British, and I thought, gee, I don't know about suppositories. They told me, Dr. Pang, you're not British. Some British people prefer a suppository to the pill, even when they're conscious. And right there I knew the only thing I had in common with the British was the English language. Now, so that's bioequivalence. Is it equivalence? Well, the regulators tell us that GM foods are substantially equivalent. There's no such term when I taught, and there's really no such term now other than this massive criticism that who coined that? I think the FDA is trying to coin this, but substantially equivalent means equivalent enough. Bioequivalent means equivalent. So let's talk about, is it the same? The same as what? The same as food. Okay, this is the Bible. Everybody believes these guys. National Academy of Sciences, 2004, Institute of Medicine. These guys call a group together whenever there's an issue, and they called one because of safety of genetically engineered foods, approaches to assessing unintended health effects. Unintended health effects. This is right on the money what we wanted to know. 2004. Okay, tell me about comparison of GM food to food. And it's on this table. This table appears twice. We'll go over it kind of slowly. Here's all the ways you can modify food. This is non-GMO, crossing the big pumpkin with the yellow pumpkin to get the big yellow pumpkin. This is GM. I put stars by it. All that fancy stuff, inserting genes that kind of don't belong there, but you had good intentions. On this axis is the likelihood, highly likely, not likely at all, highly likely, of unintended health effects. Now you can see the starred areas have much more likelihood of unintended health effects. This is the National Academy of Sciences. Everybody refers to them, even the corporations. So let's all refer to them. Okay? Well, what's the problem here? Well, there's no problem for me. Your stuff is riskier. So I think you should get written informed consent or do pivotal clinical studies. No problem. But then they brought out professors to point out to me in front of the Hawaii Association of Pediatrics that Dr. Pang's interpretation is a little bit odd. They were from Duke. They were from Harvard. They were from UC Davis. And they said, you know, with the GM food, there's nothing that we see that we don't see with regular food. And you should ask them very carefully, you mean quantitative or qualitative? Because if one causes nosebleed, the other causes nosebleed, but GM causes more. If one causes cancer, the other could cause cancer, but GM causes more. This is not a qualitative thing. This is quantitative. They had no comment, but in fairness to them, they said they have to catch a flight, okay? Then we heard, I keep saying this, and then we heard from Maui Community College, my own college, and they said, you know, Dr. Pang, this graph, it doesn't say health effects. Well, I'm sorry. The graph appears twice on page 4. Page 4, it says chemical, unintended chemical expressions. On page 64, it's the same graph. If you have unintended chemical expressions, you're going to have unintended health effects. It appears twice. It's based on unintended chemical expressions. So then there was a very prominent scientist from Penn State. She is not a physician. There's nothing magic about physicians, but she is a plant scientist. And she says, I think he's kind of right that there's unintended health effects, more with GM food, but they're not all bad. Oh, careful. You mean that if I got this GM squash, GM mango, and it's got unintended health effects, good and bad, you mean it cancels out? Do you really mean it? If it's good for your heart and bad for your kidney, it cancels out. That is okay. Look, think about it. This is how we do drugs. A drug might be good for your heart and bad for your kidney. Well, should I take it? Well, what's your problem? If you got bad kidneys and good heart, and it could it's good for your kidney, so we could do it. Your heart could withstand it because you got a good heart. Do it. But if it's the opposite, don't do it. Obviously, that thing, good doesn't cancel out bad, but they allude to it that it's like some key argument, and they repeated it for like 2 years. They continue to repeat it when I'm not in the audience, and I'm a little bit offended. Okay, next. Here is, the variance. Oh, what am I talking about that? You see, it's real subtle. The average unintended effect is greater for GM food, but you see that spread? You see that wide fuzziness? That means maybe you got a GM food that happens to be quite safe, but maybe the next year it's not, because it's all over the board. The variance is huge. And here's one of my colleagues, Jonathan Latham. He said when you put in one mutation, what, you think you got one variation? You can get, no, from hundreds to many thousands of mutations. It's like throwing a wrench in your carburetor. I don't know what's going to happen. There could be many funny things. When you throw a single mutation into your genome, my gosh, many things can happen. And they proved this. Okay? So, this is the National Academy of Science now, the same book, on page 129. This is it. The concept of substantial equivalence is frequently misinterpreted because of the mistaken perception that the determination of substantial equivalence is the end point. What happened? I escaped you. That's okay. It's a misinterpretation. Wait, you can look at me. This is not my slide. It's a misinterpretation that it's the end point rather than the beginning. So, the beginning of what? The beginning of pivotal clinical trials. The end point is before you take it to market. Sorry. The end point is before you... Don't hit the back button on this, anybody. The end point is before you take it to market. So that's their opinion. These are the gurus of substantial equivalence. Okay? Now, here it is. The industry tries to argue for all three criteria. Pivotal studies, written informed consent, right, and substantial equivalence. But they come short on any single one. And when I prepared this about 6 months ago, there was a big hoo-hoo, big front page news that they were now going to test GM bananas in humans, in students of Iowa University. First of all, Dr. Goldstein, I thought you said we can't do it. You got to lock them away. Well, I guess it's just an argument of convenience. But what happened to that little old study testing GM bananas in humans? I think they were challenged because it was considered a little bit unethical. They had not done it first in animals. You don't get to run right to humans. You've got to do the animal studies. And so that's kind of it. Now, we will hear repeatedly about jobs, but this is the new interpretation of ethics. The ethics say you will not consider jobs till you've considered these three areas. You will not consider feeding society till you consider one of these three: pivotal studies, written informed consent, or substantial equivalence. The final thing, I can't bring up the slide, a common argument by the industry is it's natural. It's natural. What does that mean? In your regular food, there's mutations all the time, sometimes from earthworm. Trust me, your normal food has mutation from earthworm. So what's wrong with us putting in something else? What's wrong is that evolution has taken millions of years, and the boo-boos have eliminated themselves. And the people who ate fruit with some kind of weird mutation, they died. They didn't learn to eat that food. So coevolution has ruled that out. Okay? Evolution has sorted it out. And the final argument, I'll leave you in peace, is just because it's natural doesn't mean it's safe. Water, is essential. In the wrong dose, in the wrong amount, it can kill you. Oxygen, important, right? Wrong dose, wrong amount, newborns, causes blindness. Hepatitis B, that's natural. That's natural, hepatitis B. We didn't modify it. A kid, given to a young kid, he'll get chronic liver cancer, high risk. So just because it's natural, it has to do with dose, timing, and, of course, the study of toxicity. Thank you.
You're listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea, our right to health live from KCC. This program has been possible for other listeners like you in partnership with Bill Fernandez, Pahana Pizza, and Kamoa Ukulele.
From barefoot boy to Kamehameha Schools cadet in 1944 to a California judge, Hawaiian author Bill Fernandez's new memoir, Hawaii in War and Peace, captures an era in both Hawaii and the continental U.S. that few have documented and many have forgotten. Available at the Kauai Museum and Kauai Historical Society, local Kapa'a stores, the bookstore in Hanapepe, at BillFernandez.com and Facebook.
Kilauea Bakery and Pauhana Pizza. Privileged to be tuning into our community's appetite since 1991. Kilauea Bakery and Pauhana Pizza at historic Kong Lun Center in Kilauea. 828-2020.
Kamoa Ukulele Company, dedicated to building high-quality bell-tone instruments. Built with a one-player-at-a-time philosophy, from student models up to custom masterpieces. Kamoa Ukulele Company, a family-owned business, supports KKCR. 652-9999 or online at kamoaukulelecompany.com.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Now back to KCC Performing Arts Center for our Right to Health live broadcast.
I really enjoyed her talk last night. She provides great insight into the interface between political process for the approval of these GMOs and their associated chemicals and the science that goes behind it. So I found her talk fascinating last night. I hope you will as well. Please give a warm welcome to Dr. Judy Carman.
Thank you all very much. I just have to adjust it for someone rather shorter. Thank you very much, Lauren, for that excellent and entertaining talk. It was really good. Thank you. I'm going to be talking about... Can everyone hear me, first of all? A little louder, sorry. I'm going to be talking about whether GMOs are safe to eat, and I'm going to be looking at the current requirements for feeding studies and what happens when you exceed them. So first of all, I'll tell you a little bit more about myself. So my background is varied. I've got several degrees. I've got a Bachelor of Science degree in Organic Chemistry and Biochemistry. I've got an Honours degree in Organic Chemistry. That's like a mini Masters in Australia. And I've also got a PhD in medicine in the field of nutritional biochemistry and metabolic regulation. And I've also got a Master of Public Health, specialising in epidemiology and biostatistics. And epidemiology is the investigation of diseases at the population level. In addition to that, I taught at an agricultural college. I've taught at several universities as well. I've worked in HIV/AIDS and nutrition at the height of the epidemic in Sydney. I've worked in nutrition research at the CSIRO, which is the government's main research body for that sort of thing. And I was the senior epidemiologist in my state's communicable disease control branch investigating outbreaks of disease. And as was said, I'm on the ad hoc technical expert group, which is a group in the United Nations trying to bring living, they call it LMOs rather than GMOs, trying to bring regulation into governments or means of how of governments regulating GMOs in the environment. So let's start, first of all, by seeing how GMOs are actually made, because a lot of it comes from this basis. A lot of the concerns about the safety comes from this. The main problem with GMOs is the concern that, in fact, the pieces of DNA that are inserted into the crop might be done quite randomly. So let's look at how one of them is actually done. This is called the biolistics method. It's one of the methods used, but it just shows you how randomly those pieces of DNA may be inserted. What they do with the biolistics method is they get small gold or tungsten particles and they coat them with the DNA that they want the plant to take up. They load up a modified shotgun and they shoot it at the plant, hoping that when the plant repairs the damage from having those balls shot at it, that some of the DNA will be incorporated into the DNA of the plant and it will be stably incorporated and the plant will then function differently by making the protein that piece of DNA actually codes for. Now, the question, therefore, is whether it might actually affect the functioning of the plant, because if it goes into a working piece of DNA that is a working gene and it's supposed to be providing, for example, a protein to the plant, it might muck up that whole process. It might increase the regulation of some genes, down-regulate some others, and there might be little bits of DNA peppered elsewhere in the genome that might also affect other genes. And the main question here is whether there might be a new substance produced that you've not seen before that might cause problems for anything that actually eats it. And the bits of DNA that go in, don't press the back button, come from plants, animals, bacteria, viruses, fungi, and often a number of these pieces of DNA from different organisms get put into a gene cassette and that gets put into the plant. A particular problem is a thing called cauliflower mosaic virus, which is a promoter sequence, which there is some evidence that it is, in fact, what's called a recombinant hotspot. So you might put that piece of DNA into that particular position in the plant, and then sometime later it might actually come out and go somewhere else and therefore create unintended effects sometime afterwards. And the other thing is antibiotic resistance, because a lot of the traditional GM crops are made resistant to antibiotics, and